Harih Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahavirayankaravavahai Tejasvinavaditamastu Mavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, page 99. Formerly, it was explained that the queen is one's intelligence. While one is awake or asleep, that intelligence creates different situations. Right, so the intelligence then is creating all these different situations that we're in, because it's how it analyzes it, what it finds is important, right? Because then, the intelligence then brings out different situations, because what you have is what it is dealing with. That gives you your opportunities, because it's what the intelligence has chosen is what you choose, right? The mind is doing the choosing, but it's going to be based on what options the intelligence gives, right? And then which ones of those are prominent, you know, or which ones are attractive is going to be based on how you identify yourself, right? So then if you identify yourself as a controller and enjoyer, then you're going to take those options that show that. If you see yourself as servant of the Lord, you're going to take the options that bring that out. Does this make sense? Yeah. So it'll create all these different situations. Being influenced by contaminated intelligence, the living entity envisions something and simply imitates the actions and reactions of his intelligence. 37. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments. This verse explains the description starting in Srimad Bhagavatam 4:25-56. Being thus entangled in different types of mental concoction and engaged in fruitive actions, King Puranjana became completely under the control of material intelligence and was thus cheated. Indeed, he used to fulfill all the desires of his wife, the queen. Whatever the queen did, the king followed. However, the intelligence changes during a dream, and whatever senses it transforms, However, the intelligence changes during a dream, and whatever senses it transforms in the waking state, the Atma contaminated by the qualities of that intelligence imitates its functions, such as seeing or touching. The Atma is simply a witness and acts by force of intelligence. The intelligence is the cause of the jiva's acting. So the jiva is only a witness, right? The jiva is actually not doing anything, but because the jiva identifies with this subtle body, right, which is headed by the intelligence here, then that's what then places you in whatever position you're in. Yes. Then he thinks he's seeing, he's touching, he's tasting and all that. So he imitates those things. Because actually, it's the intelligence is doing it. We're simply seeing the intelligence doing it. Mm-hmm. Right? And we identify with it.
Right.
Yes.
And who is desiring?
The living entity.
Means the jiva?
Yes.
So it's not only the witness, it's also the one who desires.
Yes, yes. But the point is because it desires, it follows the intelligence, because the intelligence gives the options. Mm-hmm. Is that something? Yeah. Means you're in this condition because you want it. You change your desire. Yes. Then you change the situation. Is that something? Yeah. So the living entity wants to be controller and enjoyer, so then options for that come up, and the living entity thus follows them. Right? But it's the intelligence that's seeing. The material nature, that's the fun part. The material nature is the dead matter, but it's the one that's actually seeing. Because it's doing the mechanics. Just like the car is actually going. right? You're not. You're just imitating the movement of the car because of your desire. So therefore you identify yourself with it, you move with it. Mm-hmm. But it's not that you're doing it. Otherwise it should, you know, we would think, no, I'm doing it and the senses are following. Yeah, try sitting in your car and seeing how that works. You sit there and go broom broom or something and see if you get anywhere. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why it says that a living entity is just being taken along. You know, it's just, he's there, the chariot is moving, he's going, because he identifies with it, therefore it happens. And then identifying with it, then situations are nice, he considers as good, situations aren't nice, he'll consider it bad. But it's not that one is actually in control of them. Does that make sense? Right? You have your choices there, that you have control of. But then how that choice unfolds, that you don't. Right? You get on the bus to go to New York, the bus goes to New York. You get on the bus going to L.A., it goes to L.A. Right? You can get off the bus whenever you want and end up in, you know, Tallahassee or Milwaukee, but, you know, that's up to you. Does that make sense? Yeah. But the point is once you get on something, it will unfold in a particular way. Does that make sense? That's the point. Yes.
When the living entity is giving the reaction to the imitation activities he's doing, is the happiness and distress based from the identification also secondhand?
No, means no, because there it's you could say the identification. So with that identification, then you define something as good or bad. But the point is. You understand? We're simply showing the mechanics here so that with the idea we become detached from it. The whole point is that because you identify with it, then it's called your activities. And you get the benefit, you get the action-reaction from it. You understand? Because otherwise you could take it, well, I'm not doing this, actually, so then what's the problem? You know, all these nonsense is going on, but I'm not actually, the body's doing it, the senses are, the intelligence, I'm just here. You know what I'm saying? That's the other side, how people then take philosophy and misuse it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, this is simply being used as a tool to develop detachment, because we think, I'm doing this, I am this, but then when you find out you're not actually this, then you'd rethink. So that's the whole purpose of this line of thought. Does that make sense? Yeah. And because we see here, Paranjan is not doing anything technically wrong according to Shastra. Mm-hmm. You know? So in that way, so therefore it's specifically just how he looks at it. But then the unscrupulous living entities who aren't situated in such a pious way as Paranjana, then they try to use the philosophy to substantiate their impious activities. Right. So here, we're using this to give up pious for Krishna consciousness. So it should not be used to establish pious or impious. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we have to be careful of that.
Yes.
Yes.
To select means about identification. Is it depend of our, is it related to our consciousness?
Yes.
Value?
Yes, yes. Means our consciousness then is the basically you can say the main principle of the consciousness is the identity. Because we see false egos before intelligence.
Yes.
Right? So
yes.
The false ego's there, then we have the intelligence, then there's the mind.
Yes.
Right? Because the mind has to choose what the intelligence offers. But the intelligence, its only use is then what the false ego or the ego will identify with.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
In the course of reasoning.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So the false ego is there first, so before that's the polluted consciousness.
Yes. Yes.
So so basically it comes down to, do I identify as servant of Krishna?
Yes.
Or do I identify as controller and enjoyer?
Yes. Yes.
That's basically the main choice. So do we choose Krishna or do we choose Maya?
Yes.
Because if we don't choose Krishna, the default is Maya. right? If I give you two things, one's black, one's white, whichever one you choose, the other one by default is there.
Yes.
Or if whichever one I reject, then automatically the other one is there.
Mm-hmm. Yes, okay.
So it's either Krishna or Maya. It's not that, well, I, you know, I'll do my own thing. No, it's your own thing means Maya, you know? Serving Krishna, that's then the other option. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Maharaj, when we are doing the daily activities, so this contemplation, like how we have to apply this? Because we need to get absorbed in what we are doing. So how this whole, like, understanding the mechanics will help that thing?
What are your choices?
Means, totally forget whatever we have heard while we are in
But the point is your choices are there. What are you going to do with your choices? You know what I'm saying? You don't just do something, you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you choose from what you think about. Why do you choose a particular thing? Because of your identity. So therefore that polluted consciousness gives rise to therefore polluted intelligence, contaminated intelligence, contaminated mind, contaminated identity. You have pure consciousness, then you have pure mind, pure intelligence, pure identity. Does that make sense? So if at the moment you can't use this philosophy, but afterwards you can contemplate, right? What happened? What did I do? What should I have done? What I chose, how did that work out? If I had chose differently, what would that have happened? Right? We're going to do that anyway. See, the whole point is Krishna consciousness is not adding a new element. Sometimes you say, oh, this is all new. I have to think about everything we do. That's all we do all day. We don't do anything else but think about the options we have and what was the result of what options we took and what options we could take and what results we'll get. That's all we do all day. There isn't a second option. You understand? So now it's just a matter, do we do that connected to Krishna or not? That's all. So all Krishna consciousness is just adding that element of being Krishna conscious. That's all. It's not changing actually anything mechanically. That's why when we explain the mechanics are mechanics no matter whether you're Krishna conscious or not. You know what I'm saying? It's just a matter of what effect you get whether you're Krishna conscious or not. The same mechanics, if you're Krishna conscious, you get one result. If you're not, you get a different result. Just like I cook a preparation. Mechanically, it's going to work the same way exactly whether I'm Krishna conscious or not. Right? But now, what's going to be the effect of eating boga or eating prasad? That's going to be different. One liberates you, one binds you. One brings you forward in Krishna consciousness, one brings you forward in brings you back into I am the controller and enjoyer. So that's actually, because we're so used to the gross results. But it's the subtle ones that give us happiness or distress. You understand? We say, no, it's the gross things that give me happiness and distress. No, but your gross thing, what makes you happy, makes someone else unhappy. Right? One man's food is another man's poison. Right? So that's the way it works. So it has, actually, your happiness and distress has nothing to do with the situations you're in. It has to do with how you identify with them. You understand? It's just like someone from a cold climate comes to a hot climate that's too hot for them. They'd rather go back to the cold climate. But the person who's from that climate would rather be there than be in the cold place. You understand? Yeah, so that's how it works. You understand? So that's what Narad Muni's pointing out here. Is that all this is going to come back to the consciousness. So that's what has to be taken. That's the central point. Mm. Otherwise, we tend to get distracted by the secondary, right? Because for someone to explain the primary, right, then you have to give example. That example is going to come through the medium of the secondary.
Yes.
Now, in discussing the secondary to establish the primary, we have a tendency to get distracted by the secondary.
Yes.
Like now we don't have it as much, but let's say in the first few years. Yeah. When we'd talk of give an example, then the questions would always be about the example. Mm-hmm. Not how the example applies in the discussion, just there's an interest in the example. You know? Like we say, okay, if we're doing this, so just even like, you know, the Aboriginals, you know, even they have a respect for something higher and all that, while in the West, then they don't have respect for anything. You know, these Aboriginals and all that, you know, in their living style. You understand? So we're not used to the concept that there's a primary and secondary. We're so used to secondary is all in all. That's all we have. The materialist only has secondary. You can get something more important within the secondary, so it works on the same formula as primary and secondary, because it's all coming from Krishna. So there's Krishna and his energy. So in anything, there's always Krishna and his energy, no matter what point. Even if it's within the secondary, it still has, there's Krishna and the energy within it that makes the secondary work. So you can, through example, understand the principle. But we have to be able to switch our consciousness from applying this primary and secondary to actual primary, that it's actually about Krishna. But otherwise, we tend to use, once we figure it out, then we use primary and secondary for the materialistic. You know, it's just like the Vedic system of administration or management. Like that is so far superior to anything that the modern has. It's you know, it's like night and day. But and it's very difficult for people to understand because they don't understand primary and secondary. But once they do, you explain it. Then the problem comes up is, okay, you could explain this to the karmis. You could make millions out of it.
Yes.
But do you want to explain this to the karmis? You want them to use it? Because they won't actually use this. Like the demons, they're using Vedic culture. But what for? Purely for sense gratification. Just they know it's the superior system for sense gratification. They're not so thick-headed like modern men. Right? They're smart enough to know if you actually want to be happy materially, you have to follow the Vedic version. You have to follow what the Shastra says. They're not stupid. Right? Ravana was probably one of the most expert persons in the universe at performing fire sacrifices. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Hiranyakashipu, he was a good manager. He knew how to run things. He follows all the rules. But he even wore a dhoti. Right? He could have bought anything, but he wore a dhoti. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is that they know this gives the best sense gratification, so that's why they follow it. So that's the problem, is the mechanics are for serving bhakti. The mechanics don't stand on their own, but in the modern culture, mechanics are all in all. Therefore, devotees many times, much of the time, practically all the time, get distracted that if you have a skill in the mechanics, that makes you superior to everybody else. And that makes you virtuous within the society. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing. As soon as someone gets a skill, the tendency is that they'll use it for themselves. You know what I'm saying? So that's the difficulty. They think it's superior. I could make money off of this. Yes, you could make money off of this. You know, but is that right? But we'll take, oh yes, it's right. Let's say a girl is extremely beautiful. Now she could just do, you know, service to the deities in her family, be there, and the one that really appreciates her beauty is her husband. But in the modern, she could become a supermodel. She could make millions. So in the modern concept, why you would waste it at home? You should do something with it. Right? I think the term is, if you got it, flaunt it. Right? So, therefore, that's the problem with the modern. And that's what we were discussing previously, as and now the modern means bourgeois. With a strong dose of Shudra. Right, for sense gratification. But the bourgeois means make profit off of it. Doing duties, the philosophy, these are all theory. If you can make profit, that's the real application. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, therefore, in doing this, when we're applying these things, it's about contemplating the mechanics, how well they were used in Krishna's service, and what was our attitude in using them. And of the two, the attitudes are most important. Right? So this way, then, we're going to improve our attitude, but we're also improve our skill. So Krishna consciousness automatically develops you one to the higher platform. But unfortunately, people think, no, that's me. I become so expert at something, that's me. No, that's Krishna. You follow Krishna's process, you become good. You want to trade it in, then hey, you can do it. That's Maya's trick. You can trade in Krishna conscious credits for material credits. And she'll give you an extremely good rate. Really good rate. I mean, highly profitable. Very lucrative, very attractive, you know, exchange rate. But it means for that in that exchange, you lose out on pure devotional service and going back to Godhead. That's a minor detail. That's in the fine print.
There is a commission there.
Sorry?
There is a commission.
Yeah. Yeah. Does that make sense? You know, the modern context is selling your soul to the devil, right? So, you know, it works like that. But it doesn't quite work out the way you want. Right? Because Maya's business is making you not want to be here. So even you don't want to, even you want to be here, she deals with you in such a way that, you know, you won't want to be here. Right? And if you're going for Krishna consciousness, she wants to make sure you don't take your material consciousness with you. Right? So therefore, if there's any material consciousness, she'll distract you from Krishna consciousness, because then you'll bother Krishna. Understand? So, even though it seems inconsistent, it's quite a consistent feature. You know, she is supportive of Krishna.
Yes.
She doesn't want to see us waste our time here. We should be serving Krishna, but we shouldn't be bothering Krishna in our attempt at service. Right. So she takes care of both of those sides. That's why when you want Krishna, she's then, you know, presenting Maya. And when you want Maya, then you can't get it. You know what I'm saying? The brahmachari, any girl can distract him. Anyone. He's trying to be a brahmachari. Any girl is distracted. But if he gives up and says, okay, you know, enough of this, let's be honest and all that, I'm going to find myself a girl. He can't find one in 3.5 billion girls. That's Maya. She's good. You know? Because you're not supposed to be here, but you're not supposed to bother people. Does that make sense? Is that okay? Yes.
Question. Do you know, you say you talked about, based on our identity, we get certain options from the intelligence. And then, in a previous class, you mentioned...
No. You get certain... The options that will come up will be based on what the mind chooses from samskara. The identity is which one you'll choose. You understand? That's the last. Means, in other words, I have samskaras that I consider something good or not. So if I see an opportunity for what will be good, I will choose that. The intelligence then will work on that, will process that. Then from what is processed, then according to our ego, then we will choose one of those options. Now having chose that option, it will give us a result that will further the samskara. So that's why if you start in one direction, it just keeps going that way.
Yes.
You start doing good, you keep going in the good direction. You start doing bad, you go in the bad direction. Because the samskaras are generated according to that mood.
So the samskara generates the sense of options the intelligence has to work with?
Yes, because then you have choices, just like we're sitting here in this room, right? There's so many noises going on all over the place, so many things to see. But your mind, by samskaras, has chosen listening to the Bhagavatam discussion. Right? So then the intelligence will work in that field. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Because otherwise there's so many things you could do. You walk into the courtyard of the temple. What could you do? Like, you sit down and talk to Jalpa, make some phone calls, you'd go over to the Maha shop, you could walk into the temple, you know, you could say, wow, and turn around and walk away. You know, you could do so many things. So which one will you choose? That's based on samskara.
And then you also mentioned how, obviously, we have the choice whether to identify as the servant or control and enjoy it. But in a previous class, you also mentioned that Maya keeps presenting you options until you know that, until she knows that you're not, you know, you just kind of ignore them constantly. So how do you balance the two between, you know, like knowing that I'm identifying now as a servant of Krishna, but yet I still have desires that are coming maybe from previous life or Maya's presenting options.
Or so this morning.
So how does it work?
What is the doubt?
Just trying to understand, like, okay, so now I'm identifying as a servant.
Right.
But yet I still have desires, like you said, even from this morning.
Okay, let's just say this. Let us say you get into your car, okay? And let us say that car, what kind of car would it be? Okay, let's say it's an MG, okay? Does that work?
Yes.
Okay, so now we've gotten into, no, excuse me, let's back up. It's a Mini, okay? Yeah. We get into the Mini, and we think, let's go for a drive, okay? Now, let us say we, you know, just to have some, you know, go around, have some fun, enjoy, you know, like that. Then we think, well, actually, it would be better to go to the temple, right? There's a program going on now and all that, and, you know, I'll get a bit of a drive, but we get to the temple, right? Does that make sense? You can relate to that?
I can't see the context.
You can't see the context.
As in, I can't see how it connects back.
No, but do you see what I'm talking about mechanically?
Yeah, so the desire, obviously, you have the desire.
Yeah, in other words, you're in the same, in that car, and you've switched consciousness, okay? Now here comes the point that you're doubting. Does the car change? Does it run any different? Right? The petrol was on, you know, was on the red line when you got in the car. Now, because you decided to go to the temple, now the tank's full? Right? No, that dent in the fender goes away because, you know, you decide to go to the temple. You know what I'm saying? It turns one, you know, just a regular Mini into a Cooper. Like that, you know. Like that. And suddenly the supercharger's there. You know, the whole thing, you know. You understand? So just because you become Krishna conscious, you become Krishna conscious in the field that already exists. See, this is the very mistake we were talking about 5 minutes ago. We think Krishna conscious is the secondary. So why would I still have all these things from my previous situations there? I'm Krishna conscious now. Krishna consciousness is just that, Krishna consciousness. Not Krishna, you know, my whole life becomes, you know, exceedingly fabulous in, you know, beauty, knowledge, fame, power, you know, renunciation and influence. Right? That's what we think it should do, because why do we practice religion? Because religion is dharma, it gives artha. So therefore, I'm doing dharma, where's the artha? You know, as I'm driving, instead of being a Mini, it should turn into an Aston. Right? That's the problem. So that's why these mechanics are brought up, so that we start to analyze and see the difference between us and the mechanics. Otherwise, we identify with the mechanics, but only the good ones. The bad ones, then that's where the flaw, oh, I'm not this body, I'm not this, I'm just the observer. The good ones, hey, it's all mine. Is that what it says? Yeah? Yes.
As I understand from this, materialists, they give very high position to the intelligence. so much so that they are willing to take it as a vibe.
That's just anyone with polluted consciousness, because they get anything done. Now, the commander is the mind. That's what commands the senses what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Right? Because the mind you're dealing on, that's down on the operational or the tactical level. Right? It means the senses are going to operate. That's the tactical level. The mind's going to, you know, make which the plan, which is going to go where. That's your operational. But what's the strategy? What's the concept of it? That's going to be the intelligence.
Yes.
Right? So it's because otherwise we get confused of all, you know, who's actually running it. But when you run something, there's the person that has the concept, the person that has the plan, and then there's the actual application. Right? So the mind controls the application.
Yes.
But this whole process, as Ushanash pointed out, that is the mental concoction.
Yes.
Means, you know, to make it sound good, we call it reasoning. Right? You know, so we sound intelligent, but it's actually a mental concoction. You know what I'm saying? The mechanics of it is called reasoning, but the application is actually a mental concoction.
Mm, yeah.
But if we're Krishna conscious, then we call that contemplation.
Sounds better.
Yeah, but it is better. But it has to actually be contemplation, not, what do you call it? A mental concoction and then trying to pawn it off as that. Because the problem is because it looks the same, mechanically it's the same. That's why individuals who don't know the mechanics then get bewildered.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, it's just like if I'm saying I cook this, now you do this. Oh, why are you doing that? Because it'll make it nice for Krishna. Right? Or if you do this, why are you doing this? Oh, it'll make it taste so good. Mechanically, it's the same. And yes, the taste will be better, but is it for yourself or for Krishna? Because I say it'll taste so good. I'd be like, okay, I'm inspired. I would like that. So that's why I'll do it.
So that immediately drops to pranama, is it?
Yes. Because you're looking at what gain, or even anamoy.
Even anamoy, yeah.
Yeah, I like this. I identify with this. This is me. So that's right on the bottom. So that's the difficulties. These mechanics are the same. So the mechanics that's used by anybody. You want to chant Hare Krishna. Okay, devotees are chanting. They're chanting to please Krishna. That's in pure devotion. You know, they're chanting because, you know, it's good for them. It's the right thing to do. Then there's some mix. I'm down at the yoga studio. The karmis, they're chanting Hare Krishna. Because it's nice. They like the experience. You understand? So it's the same thing, but what you're doing is the same. We take it that, no, it's about the tune, or it's about this, or it's about the beat. Those things are, why those things? Those things only add for Krishna's pleasure. But we take it that that is the Krishna consciousness. Right? It is the Krishna consciousness, but the reason for doing that is its connection to Krishna. You understand? So some devotees, they don't like new tunes, new beat, mandanga, but new anything. Because when Prabhupada was here, they didn't do that. Right? Actually, Prabhupada did do that, but they didn't notice. But whatever it is, they're doing what they're doing because that's what they understood and that's what happened when Prabhupada was here. So therefore, they don't want to change it. Why? Because it wouldn't please Prabhupada. So therefore, it's Krishna conscious. Even though there's tradition and all that. But others follow tradition because it's cool. You sit there with the mridanga, you know, you pour a little water over your head, you know, stand up a little bit, people can see your tattoos, you know, do the whole thing. But, you know, how much Krishna is involved? You know what I'm saying? It may be about Krishna, but then there's also these other aspects, so it's mixed. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing, is to understand what's the actual reality. That's what the analysis is about. So you can actually see what you're doing. Otherwise, they're doing it for Krishna. You know, you have to know when sentiment works. In other words, if there's a tradition and sentiment matches that, then you have something. But if there's a sentiment that goes against tradition, then that's not something of value. Because we take the mental concoction as more valuable than authority. Therefore, then it becomes bewildered. Oh, what should we do? Should we do like this and that? But the person really wants, and so then what about that? And inspiration and Krishna consciousness. So not knowing that's the mode of passion. Mode of goodness, you know, this is what it is. Right? Passion, you don't know. Right? And ignorance, you say, oh, that traditional stuff, that's nonsense. You know, we're just devotees. That's ignorance. You understand?
Yes.
So, if you'll notice, as we're talking, giving these examples, there's a good chance you've heard all three of these coming out of the mouths of devotees.
Yes.
From all a variety of range of levels of seniority. Right? All three are there from top to bottom. So, that's why the analysis. But we'll say, oh, that's just you know, theory. No, that makes the difference between whether you're doing pure devotional service or you're doing mixed devotional service. You know, means if you do long enough and you have that sincerity, it will come around. But if you're conscious of it, it comes around a lot quicker. So if you're at all serious about, you know, putting in that effort to try to follow Prabhupada's recommendation to try to be qualified to go back to Godhead in one lifetime, then we have to understand what's there, because these things are right here. We're only in fourth canto. And so much analysis started really seriously from the second canto. You know, it just gets finer and finer. So the technique of analysis is one thing. It's just that where are you going to apply it? Are you applying it between telling the difference whether it's Krishna or Maya? Or, you know, as it goes, then which would give Krishna more pleasure? The same process is there, the same analysis. But when it's just giving more pleasure, then you don't think of that as, you know, intellectual, a scholar. So the gopis are the topmost scholars, because yes, they're thinking every moment what little detail would bring more pleasure to Krishna. Well, we're just figuring out whether, you know, the traditional Krishna conscious things, whether that's something we even want to do or not. You know, slight difference. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's why all the analysis is there. If we understand it and appreciate it, then we can see it within analyzing within Krishna consciousness. Right? Then it becomes useful, because the point, the bottom line is you're doing it anyway. At every moment, you're deciding whether I should do this or that, or I did that, that didn't work out, or that worked out good, should I, you know, how to do. That's all we do all day. 24/7. Even in our dreams, or working out what's the best thing, you know, should I fly now, or should I do this or that, or, you know. That's all we do. But because it's not done connected to Krishna, then it's weak. We do it connected to Krishna, then it's perfection. So that's all we're trying to do, is change the conscious. The mechanics of everything remain the same. We take it, oh, you just have to change conscious, so we don't have to change any of the secondary things we do. No, the rule is you don't have to change the mechanics of anything you do. That will always remain the same. You are going to use the intelligence. You are going to apply it according to the laws of nature. The question is what are you, who's it for? And depending upon who's it for, that's where you make a distinction. Right? Let us say the principle of shopping. Right? Right? You understand?
Yeah.
You go somewhere, you look for something, you pay money,
yes,
you get the thing. Right? It applies any shop, anywhere on the planet.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Okay. Now, that's the thing that doesn't change. But now, if, let's say someone's an intelligent shopper, if they're buying something for one person or another person, is there any difference in what they buy?
Yes.
But the process of buying, is it different? No. That's the difficulty. That's where the confusion comes up. Because we think, oh, nothing changes means I don't have to change any of the secondary. On one level, no, you don't have to. Right? But the actual important thing is I don't have to change the principles that I'm using. Because the secondary, when I do it for Krishna, it might change. If my favorite thing is, you know, a Limburger cheese sandwich with onions and garlic and a bunch of mustard, then I might change that. But the principle of preparing things and eating things, that's not going to change. You understand?
Yeah, I'm just thinking why they are mixing these.
Because of attachment. Attachments, the control and enjoying. So envy and attachment, that's the basis. So is it envy and attachments the basis of what we function on? Or is we're servant of Krishna, so based on trying to please Krishna, or love of God. So that's the thing. You have love or you have lust.
Yes.
Right? That's the most central point. Right? If it's lust, then that means I'm the controller and enjoyer, so how to express this control and enjoyment? Right? That gets you the secondary features. If it's love for Krishna, then how to use the situations, my attraction, my attachments, my endeavors to please Krishna. And then it works on different. But mechanically, they're the same. The real thing and the reflection in the mirror work on the same mechanics. It's not that you bend your arm one way and then the mirror bends the other way. You go, wow, isn't that freaky? You know, hey, come over. Hey, check this out. You know? Right? That's the thing, is we're so rooted in the external that we think anything changed. Where would that come from? We would think, why is that? You know, this is something new to me. But actually, no, it's been this since time immemorial. Okay, if I want to enjoy my senses, what do I do? Work, right? Engage my senses, I get results, I enjoy the work. What if I want liberation? What do I do?
Nothing.
Right? That's where it comes from. Because we don't go back for karma and jnana. So we think is that karma means I do this activity. Jnana means I don't do any of that activity. So when we come to Krishna consciousness, we think, Krishna consciousness, I don't do any of that activity. But now it only kind of looks like that because all the activities we've done before are quite impious. Right? If you come from a modern background, there's a good chance you have to adjust your whole life on four major levels. Right? But now let's say someone comes from a pious Indian background, following tradition and that, they don't have to change anything. They've been following the four regular principles their whole life. So is their parents, so is their grandparents, so is their great-great-grandparents, so is their great-great... For seven generations, they can quote who has been following that. So what changes for them? Only consciousness. You understand? So, for those who... Then we have to do those, because if we don't make those restrictions, we won't be able to tell the difference. Right? The regulative principles, those are activities that are just too distracting. They too much support I'm the controller and enjoyer. Therefore, they're not of any use. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Right? The guy's been married, you know, 10 years. You know, he's not thinking about all aspects of his marriage and his wife 24/7, right? No, but if he has a paramour, then he does. You understand? But externally, it looks the same, right? The wife's doing all her duties, the husband's doing all their duties. It looks exactly the same. You understand? But are they actually focused? No, they're totally distracted. So it's only out of practice and habit. Now, let us say the couple, you know, the typical modern couple, you know, the girl hasn't, you know, boiled water in her whole life, and the guy's never actually dealt with girls as anything other than, you know, objects of sense gratification. They get married, okay? Now, if after a few days they get involved with a paramour, then it will be kind of obvious because they don't know how to do anything. But give them 10 years, then they get down their practice. You know, she's figured out how to boil water, and he's kind of learned that, you know, if you don't deal nicely, then, you know, silence for 3 days isn't that great after all. You know, so all these different things, and they start to work it out. right? Then you have a practice, you have a habit, so then you won't see it. Does that make sense? So what it is so distracting. That's why the regulative principle. So intoxication, it does, you don't see what's there. You can't tell what's right and wrong anymore. You know what I'm saying? Gambling, you just, this greed is so great that I could get so much from so little. That illusion just drives you nuts. Right? Meeting, that you're willing to kill another living entity just for taste. You know what I'm saying? It means people say, it's, you know, wow, I'd kill for that. You know, it's a joke, but in actuality, no, they would. They do. You know what I'm saying? So, these things are so distracting. That's why then they're left. But everything else, then it's just a matter of if it works for you now, you use it. But if you're attached to the secondary, then as you progress in Krishna consciousness, it'll be a problem for you. Right? Well, if you understand the mechanics of it, what's being given here, then that remains. You know, let's say someone likes to shop, but then they shop for Krishna. So what shops are going into, how they're looking at, what are the considerations? It changes. But the shopping doesn't. So that means the principle remains. Whatever it is that is there in the nature, that doesn't change. Just where you're going to apply it, because it will be more favorable to Krishna. So if you don't see it as more favorable, you work in that area, that's fine. But as you become purified, because of knowledge and detachment, you're able to move into this other area. You understand? And if you don't want to move into the other area, simply just means that's a really strong attachment, that's all. Does that make sense?
Can I say that actually the mind didn't switch to Krishna conscious side?
It may have, but only it has only switched on certain aspects of the philosophy. Right? In other words, intellectually it has, but realization isn't very deep. Right? And culturally we haven't changed, because we don't see Krishna consciousness as a lifestyle. Right? Krishna is Krishna conscious, and all his devotees are Krishna conscious. So in that environment, how do they act? In other words, how does a person who's naturally Krishna conscious act? That was Arjuna's first question. How does such a person act? What do they do? How do they talk? How do they sit? How do they walk? Right? So there is a Krishna conscious standard. Right? But those standards are based on the principle of serving Krishna. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing. If it's about Krishna, he being the supreme authority, right, the parampara, the acharyas, they all represent him, the shastras represent him, then that's what we would favor. Otherwise, then we'll make the choice that Narada Muni mentioned. We will choose, you know, we will ignore all the restrictions and just what can we get away with. In other words, I will try to see, take everything and turn it into what are my rights and not look at it, what are my obligations. That makes sense?
There is another side point to that, that actually we talk how to improve our service to Krishna in a proper way, so they take it that it's offensive to talk like that because we are all devotees. So.
Yes, unless it's something modern and
yes,
professional,
exactly.
Then that's reality and anything else is archaic. You understand?
Yes.
So that's where, one, you have a bewilderment because they can't tell the difference, that's the passion. But that they choose the modern over the Vedic and say the Vedic is not important, that's ignorance. Yeah, so that's why you see it's a very contradictory position. It's not about all these designations, but I remember walking into the manor and there was a thing on the board. It was talking about how this Bhaktin, who'd only been around a few months, was doing the Bhakti Shastri course. And I asked someone, oh, why is she doing, why not, you know, this devotee or that devotee? Oh, they're not qualified. They've been around the movement 30, 40 years. Why are they not qualified? Oh, they didn't take the, you know, how to teach Bhakti Shastri course, training. So they're not qualified. So that means you take the modern opposed to the Vedic, which means someone who's done and things like that and time and realization. That's atheistic. And that was posted right on the wall, right in the manor, on their bulletin board. You understand?
It needs some brains.
Yes, it needs brains. I mean, it needs Krishna conscious brains. Because otherwise, brains is not enough. It's the consciousness. Because brains are there. You know? The modern culture, you know, supports brains and, you know, some degree of sophistication and stuff like that. So that aspect is there, but how you use it, do you use it for Krishna? Right? Because Krishna says in 11th canto, if you oppose Krishna's position, then you're not in a strong position to call yourself a devotee. And it actually says that in the verse. Prabhupada's talking, I mean, Krishna's talking about devotees. He's not talking about karmas. So that's what happens, because devotional service can be performed in all the three modes. So when it gets opposing what Krishna is giving, and especially it becomes destructive, then that's the lowest levels of ignorance. But you still have faith in Krishna. The definition of such a devotee is they have faith in the deity. They have faith in Krishna. But they just don't see devotees, don't see anything other than their material qualifications are Krishna consciousness. And anything other than that is not. So that's where it comes in. Is all, in other words, breaking down what you said before, all these things about what people would be doing, oh, these aren't important. That means it's not my nature to do those things. Right? And then what is my nature? Oh, that is Krishna consciousness. That's the thing. This is the real advancement. I'm advanced. I'm superior. Just like I said, that bhaktin of X amount of months was more senior than anybody else in the temple. You know, probably came from some academic background, and that's why they like going there, and that's why they did well. And so they have qualification on that side, intellectually. Right? You understand? So the mechanics are good. But we have to see, what about consciousness? What about these other things? Right? We're not saying that that person couldn't be the most advanced. But that's not the point that's being made. It's not about who is more advanced or who like that. It's simply that they have this particular skill, a so-called skill. And that's it. That's why the advancement. That's the definition by Kapila Muni of a neophyte devotee. Devotional service in ignorance means your material qualification is how you define your advancement. Right. Someone has money. Oh, then he should tell everybody how to make everything successful. You know what I'm saying? He comes from an intellectual background. Oh, therefore he's the smartest of everybody. Does that make sense? These are mistakes. It means they have the qualification for that mechanics, but unless they're mature in Krishna consciousness, then someone should be guiding them how to use that mechanics. Right? Because if we go by that kind of definition, then Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj wasn't very advanced, because he couldn't read or write. But great scholars would come to him for direction.
He wouldn't qualify for Bhakti Shastra.
No, he wouldn't. He wouldn't. Actually, if you took most people in our line all the way back to Narad Muni, they wouldn't qualify. Like that. You know, Brahma. We would not let Brahma come into our temples.
No, he would be forbidden.
He would be forbidden. He chased after his daughter. We would not forgive him for that. This is the problem. Krishna consciousness is one thing, mundane atheistic morality is another.
Just asking, should we wage war against that of some kind?
In our own heart, yes. You know what I'm saying? Like that. And probably don't have, at least for yourself, don't have conversations with individuals that you don't necessarily appreciate their position next to a window. Yes?
I think I am never at the window.
So, what? So next sentence.
Can I delay you for a moment?
Yes, yes.
You were speaking earlier of mental concoction and what was the other one?
Contemplation?
Reasoning.
Is that the same when you were making the differentiation between mental speculation and philosophical speculation?
Well, actually, mental speculation and philosophical speculation are the same. It's just that mental speculation means you're showing what instrument you're using to perform the process. Mm-hmm. Philosophical speculation means what is the topic.
Mm. I was under the impression that mental speculation was more centered around what you wanted.
Also do like that. But the point is why would somebody philosophically speculate unless that's what they liked? So in other words, only someone who had the mind that appreciated philosophy would philosophically speculate.
Okay.
So the generic thing you could say is mental speculation. Mm. Because why it's mental, because you mentioned here, it says that it's the mind that's doing it. Mm-hmm. Being thus entangled in different kinds of mental concoction and engaged in fruitive activities. So, but he's saying he's under the control of his wife. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he says, entangled in different types of mental concoction, engaged in fruitive activities, King Paranjana came completely under the control of material intelligence and was thus cheated. Mm-hmm. So that whole process, depending on what you want to bring out, you use different names. So reasoning is the mechanics that it goes through.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mental concoction will mean that it's going to be, it's rooted in the mind. Because basically you have the mind, and then you can say it's a sub-portion of the mind would be the intelligence and the ego. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
The polluted conscious. So all that will go together, but it'll be the mind that's the commander. It,
right.
It's organizing. It's seeing how it unfolds. Does that make sense?
Okay.
So it just depends what you want to bring out is which synonym you'd use.
Okay.
Right? So when we say, contemplation, or manana, it's the same process of reasoning,
mm-hmm.
but you're doing it to how to understand what we've heard from authority,
right.
For upliftment, because this is an Upanishadic principle.
Right.
So it has to be based, connected with the philosophy and upliftment of the living entity. But, and for us, then we mean it's if it was only that much, then we call it philosophical speculation.
Right.
Right? So you could say mental concoction, that would be what everybody's doing.
Yes.
Then you have a smaller group that does philosophical speculation. Right?
Right.
So that's what I'm saying.
Yes.
But if you're doing it to please Krishna, then that's contemplation. That again, then everybody can do. Right? So you don't have to be a scholar to be involved in that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that's what we're meaning is that we're always analyzing what we should have done, what we could do, what was the result we got from what we did do, what we could get from what we will do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that what I'm saying? So, that's the point is then if you bring that in line with Krishna, it's about how to please Krishna, then the process is viable.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's simply a system, a mechanical system. So it's not that stops. That was why then when the question came up, Kunti brings the question up, and I think who brings it up?
Kumaras.
The Kumaras bring it up. Oh yeah, because they were talking to Hamsavatar, no? The Kumaras bring it up. That when will we be able to separate the mind from, the activities?
Mm-hmm.
Because by the mind being engaged in speculation with activities is causing anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
So in both positions, Devahuti also. So then the point comes up is, no, that's not going to happen. That's impossible.
Mm-hmm.
The mind will always be engaged with the senses.
Right.
The point is what is your purpose in engaging it? It's like saying, when will the car stop driving? like that. That's not, it's not a plausible thing. That will always happen.
Right.
So the process of reasoning will always go on. That will include the mind, because you have intelligence, that means you have senses. Mm-hmm. Right? You have the mind, you know, that's you're going to be experienced. You have your identity. That's what places you within that. If I want to do something, I have to have an identity. If I don't know who I am, that's why I don't. So people who can't do anything is because they don't know who they are. Mm-hmm. Right? When they know who they are, then they can figure out how they fit in the equation. Right? So the intelligence includes the senses, what could be done. Right? Then you choose, then depending upon how you identify yourself, you know, where you'd fit, then the mind chooses. Mm-hmm. Right? And then things happen. So they all go together. So you can't separate them. So that's why you can say the whole thing is just mental concoction or contemplation, mm-hmm. which is based on the mind, because that's the actual act of principle. So the one who's making it happen is the mind. Right, who's leading is the intelligence. Mm-hmm. And why you're even there in the first place is your ego. Mm-hmm. That's it. Yeah. Yeah. That's it. Okay. Menard Muni continued, "What I referred to as the chariot was in actuality the body. The senses are the horses that pull that chariot. As time passes, year after year, these horses run without obstruction. But in fact, they make no progress." Pious and impious, so means that in the beginning we have difficulty engaging the senses. But with time, then those obstructions go away. But even they've gone away, still you don't get anywhere. That's the point. Because for the soul, if you're not developing Krishna consciousness, you're not actually getting anywhere. Pious and impious activities are the two wheels of the chariot. The three modes of material nature are the chariot's flags. The five times of life air constitute the living entity's bondage. Right? Because the life airs, they do everything. Like you expand, that's one air. And then it also, the opposite of it, it contracts. You have five main life airs, but they have five secondary airs that do the opposite of what they do. If something expands, they contract. Right? If something goes up, then the other one goes down. Like that. So all the movement that we do and digestion, that's all done by the life airs. Like that. Yeah? And the mind is considered to be the rope. Intelligence is the chariot driver. The heart is the sitting place in the chariot. And the dualities of life, such as pleasure and pain, are the knotting place. Right, so it means that you're going to, means you have the place where you can tie the reins. Mm-hmm. So that's what you're tied to. Now, by using the reins with the senses, then you consider something pleasure or considering something pain. Right, so they all go through those. Right, that, or in this case, you have something where they go and then you pull there so they're not bound, but it keeps them from going all over the place. Right? I think they have like that, no? You have little, like those little circles there? And then the reins come through that, so you pull so they don't go here and there and get lost. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's our, you know, doing that, then we feel pleasure and pain. Yes. Right? Yeah. The seven elements are the coverings of the chariot, and the working senses are the five external processes. The 11 senses are the soldiers. Right, so different things can have different functions. Does that make sense? So the 11 soldiers, but also the senses were the horses. But when you put all of them together, then they're the soldiers. You're just taking the knowledge acquiring senses. Then you call those the horses, because that's how you're going to connect with everything. Mm-hmm. Right, but you're going to get things done. The external process is, I want to taste something, but what am I going to use? I'm going to use my hands. Mm. Right. To get what I want to pick up with my hands to put in my mouth, I have to use my feet. Yes. Does that make sense? You know, so they're just the external processes. Being engrossed in sense enjoyment, the living entity, seated on the chariot, hankers after fulfillment of his false desires and runs after sense enjoyment life after life. Mriga Trishnam Padavati, 15 to 20, Srila Prabhupada explains. In these verses, the words Mriga Trishnam Padavati are very significant because the living entity is influenced by a thirst for sense enjoyment. Right? So we identify as the controller and enjoyer. But then there's our interest to fulfill that. Right? Mm. Because being controller and enjoyer, that's an inherent basic principle. But then that has to be applied.
Yes.
So that apply, that's this, what do you call it? What was the word Prabhupada used? The Trishna. Right? So we know it as Asat Trishna. Right? Because then the same thing, if you have a taste for Krishna consciousness, then that was what drives you.
Yes.
Right? So this taste, that brings us to actual the secondary position of control and enjoyer. That you actually have to have something to control and enjoy through. Therefore the body.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So the body then is the manifestation of our desire to be the controller and enjoyer. So however we wanted to be controller and enjoyer, that's where we are now. So the particular body we have, the particular situation we're in, is because we wanted to control and enjoy in this particular way.
Yes.
Right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
So, you know, yeah. So that comes from the thirst.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the identity, but then there has to be the desire for that. That will then generate what we have now, the practical, yes.
So is this position thing the citta then, this asa position?
Yes, yes. The polluted consciousness would have all that. Because polluted means we've added, you have consciousness, but we've added I'm the controller and enjoyer. So that becomes polluted. So then yes. The next natural stage is then the taste for that, that attraction, that attachment. That will then generate the particular forms and situations we have. Right, so in another way, if we're putting it as this Asat Trishna, then you have Hriday Dalbalya, the weakness of heart. So the original weakness is heart, as I'm the controller and enjoyer. The secondary weakness of heart, or the manifestation of that, is going to be I have this particular body, so therefore it can control and enjoy in this particular way. Right, next life it'll be a different body. So that's why the living entities in Vasudeva Sattva, they're on the transcendental platform. In that they don't have a material body. They're not being controlled as such by the modes. Right? They're outside of the creation in that way. But because they have this Trishna, this taste for the material life, it's just all it is just they're in that position of Vasudeva Sattva until the point that Brahma starts the secondary creation. And once it gets down to the level wherever we fit in, then you know, then we take up that position.
Is it that those without a practical way to apply their desire to control and enjoy, they become hopeless and ignorant, and then eventually they have to become ghosts?
Yes, basically. Like that. That's where basically is, if you look at it, modern psychology is how that you can proper processes of thinking, you know, proper processes of analyzing, you know, how to make a choice, how to analyze, how to make a choice, and what is your identity. So they work on those principles. And all they're trying to do is get you so that you can function in society as whatever's the standard of sense enjoyment that is popular at the time of when you happen to come in and sit on the couch. Right? Like that. So that's what they're trying to do. So if you've gone crazy, you know, means you can't function in the society, then they can work to such a point to bring you back that you can work in society in sense gratification. But to take you beyond that, it's not their purpose. You know, it's just like, you know, the lug wrench, you know, has a limited application. It can't do something else. You know, you could maybe use it kind of to, you know, hammer nails and that, but, you know, it wouldn't work as good. So that's the weakness, is that we see is also is one of the, for the karmis, that's all the more they want. But for devotees, they use the same system. If you have a problem, it can bring you back to not having that, to neutral. But there's the illusion it can take you into positive, and it's not there. It's not their system. So that's the problem. If someone's really dysfunctional, they can make them back to functional. But the idea that they can take it forward and positive and all that, they don't have the tools. Their system's not meant for that. You know what I'm saying? So that's the difficulty. It can't. It actually can't be used. I've never seen it really do much good. I've seen those who get into it and really have benefited from the psychological support generally end up very involved in standard material life.
It can get you to passion.
It can get you to passion, but it can't get you to goodness, because the founder, he's not known for being in goodness. So that's the thing. So, in other words, let's say you go into the emergency room. They know how to stabilize you, but they don't know how to fix you. You know what I'm saying? That's not what it's for. You know, there's some subcritical situation, they can make you stable so that those that know how to can do. But the problem is because of the modern need for, or just the need for ego, this prestige and all that, then it's given greater. It's like the emergency room is all in all. That's all you need. So that's the weakness. And you know, for the karmis, that's all the more they want.
All the shows are about the emergency room.
Yeah, it's always about the emergency room. Like that, you know? Like that. That and the, you know, and how you say, I see, right? Who cares about anything else? Right? You never have a show about dermatology and the guy's got a pimple or a little rash. I got a wart, you know, like that. And then the camera goes in and the music, duh, you know, everybody's face and like that. No, they don't do that. They don't do that. Yeah. So that's it. So for the karmis, that's all the more they want. And then the psychiatrist can think, I've been successful. You know, because they brought them back to the point of being a sense gratifier in society, and they're comfortable with themselves, and, you know, they can move around and stuff like that. So they feel satisfied, the individual, the patient feels satisfied, everyone's satisfied. But with devotees bringing you up to that level, then what was the point? You know. What greatness has been done? So that's the problem. Because unless you understand the Vedic psychology, you can't take someone beyond that. Because it's based on pranamoy at best. And its goal is anamoy. So unless you understand the three higher levels of consciousness and the mechanics there, then you can't get anyone past that point. Does that make sense? Means that you've Sahotra Maharaj's book on Vedanta psychology. That was written as his research work. Means all those different scholars that he quotes, all those, you know, all the founding fathers of the modern psychology. He's talked to experts in all the field trying to understand how it works, and they can't answer. So therefore, then he turned to the Vedanta, and there, then he found all the things. That's what the book's showing. Is that actually Vedanta has the psychology to bring you to the transcendental position. The other ones, like our kids' stuff that play around, maybe they work, maybe they don't, on bringing up to the, you know, making you a good member of the pranamoya community. Right? But if you want more, they can't give it. Very smart people, very thoughtful people. They have really interesting techniques how to get you to talk, like that, right? You know, I mean, the cliche is when we say that we have ways to make you talk. What particular national, you know, kind of background do we think of?
KGB.
Huh?
KGB.
Yeah. So it has to be someone from over that side, right? You know, and that's where he's from, that side. So they know how to make you talk. But whether you talk anything useful, what they'll do with what you talk, then that's another thing. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So sadly enough, unless you analyze it, then people get distracted. So that's the whole point that Humps Avatar is making, is that you can't not connect this, you can't separate the senses from the sense objects. So therefore, you connect them on a Krishna conscious platform. Because the modern method is you can't separate them, so hey, whoopee, let's go for it. We're just being natural. Mm-hmm. Right? Devotees throw around this term natural like anything. But, you know, pile of garbage is natural. Right? Right? You understand? So that's the only thing that can get you beyond. So it has to be how to contemplate connecting the senses to Krishna. Otherwise, we're going to work on this Krishna. That's what Prabhupada's talking about. This desire to enjoy is going to be the drive. And unless we see enjoyment connected to Krishna, which is the nature of the pure soul. The pure soul understands I am by nature happy. But that happiness is actually coming from the Supreme. So therefore, my connection is with the Supreme. But we're under the illusion, no, my happiness comes from the senses contacting the sense objects. So we commit ourselves there.
Yeah.
But if we understand, no, my happiness comes from contacting Krishna, then our approach is totally different. So when I get disturbed by the senses touching the sense objects, then it's a problem. You know, it's just like, let's say somebody's on a diet. Okay? Why are they on a diet?
They want to lose weight.
Yeah, they want to lose weight because something's gone wrong.
Yes.
Right? They like to eat. Right? They like to eat certain food. Now, the problem is now what's their view on everybody else's eating what they're not supposed to eat? Yeah, nobody should be eating this. Why would anybody eat this? Right? So then it just that's the natural thing is that therefore the senses and the sense objects don't touch.
Yeah.
Rather than there's an alternative how you approach it.
So for devotees assisting people who are on that like desperate stage, they're able to provide not only the practical application but an actual direction.
Yes.
All in one.
Yes. If you understand the system like that. But the problem is you'd be you might be at a disadvantage if you understood the modern. Because the modern, the fundament of it is sense gratification. Now, only if you can see engaging the senses in the Lord's service is the thing, then you could use those techniques, but then you'd be able to see them in the Vedanta. So you just use the Vedanta, because that's pure goodness. Why use passion and ignorance when you use pure goodness? You know, just as a arbitrary example of someone who never had a problem with what everybody else ate but was always on a diet. I was just reminded by G here. We had a god brother that he loved to eat, and he loved to eat a lot, and he knew if he ate a lot of, you know, anything, he'd get sick or this or that. So he figured out things that he could eat, that he liked to eat, that he could eat a ridiculous amount of and not get sick. Like that. You know, and then he would change that every 2 weeks, you know, to have a new thing. I remember one time it was mango season, he only ate mangoes. 10 kilos a day of mangoes. Like that. And another time he only ate, you know, when it was the winter season was there, he only ate like raw foods. I think he used to eat corn. He wouldn't even cook it. He'd just pick it and eat it straight. You know, just things, but he would eat 10 kilos of whatever it is. Like that. But he didn't have any problem with anybody else eating. Because his thing was, I like to eat, so everybody likes to eat, so eat. But, you know, I'm just going to eat this. You know. Is that what I'm saying? You know, so he had an alternative that didn't make it difficult for others. Right? You know, mostly people on diets don't eat. But he was on a diet, eat.
Yeah.
You know? I got tons, you know?
The conception wasn't started from a problem.
No. means he could see is that he had to be careful. In other words, he wasn't trying to how to stop the senses, but how to engage them in such a way that they weren't detrimental. Right? So now you just take that, the same principle, and take it to Krishna consciousness. So how do I like to engage the senses. So how can I engage the senses in that context in connection to Krishna? That's what the whole Vedic system is about. That's why it seems so different. That's why we say, oh, the Vedic system is so different from the modern system. Yes, because it's how to engage the senses in a positive way, just rather than how to engage the senses in sense gratification. So right there, the fundament of the principle, I mean of the system, is totally different. That's why devotees can't relate to it. Not anything else. Right? Because you say, oh no, but you're discriminating this, that. What's the point of non-discrimination? What ultimately do I want to gain by we don't discriminate? And what will I gain by inclusiveness? And what will I gain from that? But that's based on sense gratification. You understand? So the whole purpose of all these modern isms is to bring about sense gratification. Nothing more. Nothing more glorious. We can, you know, go blue in the face trying to prove how it's different, but it can't. It's impossible. Because that's all it is. So the Vedic system takes it up to the next level of consciousness so that you can engage the senses and expertly, but all connected to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. So it doesn't distract you from Krishna consciousness. Because we see using the pranamayak distracts from Krishna consciousness. That's its purpose. So you can't use something that its purpose is destroying Krishna consciousness in Krishna consciousness. But if you use artha that's based on dharma, that can match. But artha that's based on kama, that won't. And then the worst part is because we're devotees, we drop off the kama. Then we just have artha, and neither they have dharma, nice relationships, and neither they have sense gratification. That's really sad. That's really sad. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
He is like a deer that goes out to search to the desert to search out water, right? Because you want to thirst for sense enjoyment, so then you go looking for it, but it's like going into the desert. In a desert, an animal simply searches in vain for water. Of course, there's no water in the desert, and the animal simply sacrifices his life in an attempt to find it. Everyone is planning for future happiness, thinking that somehow or other, if he can reach a certain point, he will be happy, right? This is that speculation I was talking about. You know, that we all go through, right? In actuality, however, when he comes to that point, he sees that there's no happiness. Therefore, the process continues, right? So now one could say, but in Krishna consciousness, the same process will just keep going on. But it's because you come to that point of happiness. You've gotten that happiness for Krishna, you're happy, and you want to continue that process because it's so nice. Right? So then we can continue that same contemplative process on how to engage the senses and the objects of the senses to please Krishna. That will continue, right? Because it's about Krishna's senses. Right? So if we can just directly go from, okay, my senses, and just switch it over to just Krishna's senses, that's nice. That means we're pious and, you know, very personal, and we could do that. If not, then we're given this analytical system to show how the senses that we call our senses aren't really our senses, and they're actually Krishna's potency. Mm-hmm. And so therefore Krishna's connected to it. So I will analyze it down to where I get to the point of Krishna, then take it back up to the connection to Krishna. Yes. In this way, so mechanically, I will connect them over. It won't be spontaneous. Yes. Right? But at least I'm breaking down the sense gratification and connecting to Krishna.
Yes.
But if I can naturally just, I want to cook for Krishna, I want to sing for Krishna, I want to do something for Krishna, then the mechanical process is already obtained. The purpose of it is already obtained. You don't have to do something separate. But if it's not, then it's a valuable method how to break it down so that we can see the difference between sense gratification and Krishna consciousness.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Right. Does that make sense?
Yes.
You know, it's just like, let us say, I want to take out the nail, right? And so I have the hammer, I have the thing or whatever I'm using to take it out. Now, let's say the top of the nail falls off. Then I have to go get a pair of pliers and all kinds of, do all kinds of crazy stuff. So that's the whole point. If I can just switch it from my sense gratification to Krishna's sense gratification, mm-hmm. it's that simple.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. No effort, doesn't need great scholarly pursuit. But if not, I can't, then these are the techniques you can use to actually bring it across.
Yes.
So these are the tools given how to use. That's why they're considered knowledge. But when you come to the platform of bhava, there's no need of that knowledge.
Yes.
So it says the knowledge is gone, because mm-hmm. the knowledge is compared to the knowledge is fire that's burning on the wood of material consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So when the material wood of material consciousness is gone, the fire is also gone. So using the knowledge in that way, that analysis is gone at bhava. You don't need it past bhava. You know, once you get there, it's not necessary anymore, right? But it doesn't mean that the formulas of contemplation of senses and sense objects and connection to Krishna doesn't remain. Just now, it's all about just serving Krishna. That's why you have such refined interaction between the Lord and the devotees. You know, the degree of sense gratification that devotees are arranging for Krishna is very, very refined. Because they're still applying the same process, but now it's not called knowledge. Now it's just called devotional service.
Mm.
Does that make sense? Yeah? So it's only necessary where there's a problem. If there's no problem, it's not necessary. Right. He thus plans to go further and further to another point. Right? You get to the point, there's no happiness, then the next point. This is called Mriga Trishna. Right? So the deer thinks, oh, over there's water. You get there's no water, then keeps going until they die. Right? And its basis is sense enjoyment in this material world. Footnote 38. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes in the Bhajan Rahasya, the living entity attracted by Maya is attributed with four types of anarthas: Hridai Darbalya, weakness of heart; Aparada, all kinds of offenses; Asat Trishna, material desires; and Tattva Vibhrama, illusion about spiritual knowledge. These anarthas lead to material bondage, which leads to miseries. Because if you have these anarthas, they bind you, because they're going to be your basis why you get involved in the material world. And then because of that, that's why you're unhappy. Right? Because we're unhappy, we want to solve the problem of being unhappy, so therefore we make this endeavor to do them more.
Yes.
Right? I'm banging myself on the head with a hammer, it hurts, so I'll bang harder, and maybe that will knock the pain out of my head. Right? Yeah. It makes sense. Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Yeah. These anarthas lead to material bonders, like Uncle Fester, right? Which leads to miseries. Desire for material objects, desire for heavenly comforts, desire for mystic powers, and desire for liberation are the four types of material desires. Right? The objects themselves, heavenly comforts, mystic powers, and liberation. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 4.4.22 describes those who are free of material desires. Okay. They say, the Supreme Lord is the whole world for us. Renouncing the desire to enjoy children, wealth, or anything else in this world, they become sannyasis. They accept alms. They wander over the earth. Because there's nothing that they need. Because if you have the material object, then what are you going to get from having nice material objects? Right? Then there's going to be heavenly comforts. right, having the comforts, then you want to take it a step further, the mystic powers. You want to be able to control people through your comforts and everything. Then what's the next one from that, right? Because it doesn't work out, you want liberation.
Right.
Yes.
This what is the difference between weakness of heart and material desires?
No, that's the same.
Four types of anarthas.
Oh, okay. No, weakness of heart was what I mentioned before. Is that I'm the controller and enjoyer, right? That's the first principle. That's the original that maintains. Then the secondary form of that is I have this particular body, right? And I'm attached to the body and its facilities like that. Because that can express I'm the controller and enjoyer. Yes. The asatrishna is then the taste for the material desire. The one is I want to control and enjoy. The other is the taste I have from that. Right? So when you apply the secondary part of a hridai darbalya, then you get a asatrishna. Tattva vibhrama. Illusion about spiritual knowledge. That's a good one. Yes, the Maya. What was previously explained as Chandavega, powerful time, is covered by days and nights, named Gandharvas and Gandharvis. The body's lifespan is gradually reduced by the passing of days and nights, which number 360. What is described as Kala Kanya should be understood as old age. No one wants to accept old age. But Yavaneshwara, Yavanaraj, who is death, accepts Jara, old age, as his sister. Footnote 39. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur remarks, she is merciful to the Vaishnavas. By the order of Narada, she helps them surpass death. Right? Because the point is, because the devotees are connected to Krishna.
Yes.
Therefore, all these personalities help, right? Like you see, when Dhruva Maharaj was stepping onto the chariot to go back to Godhead, death personified was offering themselves as a step.
Yes,
you know that he could step up onto him to get into the chariot.
Yes.
Right. So these same problems that are big problems for the karmis are not problems for the devotees. Mm-hmm. Right. So old age and death aren't an obstacle in devotional service, right? Because in sense gratification, they're a big obstacle,
yes.
Right? The senses don't work, you can't do anything, you can't function. Mm-hmm. But for devotional service, it doesn't get in the way at all. Because then, being able to contemplate Krishna, remembering Krishna, these things, they become more easy. Like that. So in this way, then they help. They actually help. Mm-hmm. They're not a problem. So the followers of Yavaneshwara, Yamaraj, are called the soldiers of death. And they are known as the various types of disturbances that pertain to the body and mind. Prajvara represents two types of fever, extreme heat and extreme cold, typhoid and pneumonia. Both pretty well. How you say? Well established. The living entity lying down within the body is disturbed by many tribulations pertaining to providence, to other living entities, and to his own body and mind. So, because we think of fever as how you say?
High temperature.
Yeah, it's a high temperature, but you have the temperature, but it's how it affects you is it can either be heat or cold.
Yes.
Just like, let's say you have malaria, it has both. First you feel really hot, then you feel real cold, and feel it just goes back and forth. So the effects. So that's why Prabhupada would say sometimes, depending on what the fever is, if it's you feel hot and you're hot, then taking a cold bath is not a problem. Because generally the modern thing is if you have a fever, don't take a bath. But that's only if it's a cold fever. Right? That'll make it work. But if it's a hot fever, it just brings the temperature down. So then, the tribulations, you know, pertaining to providence. Providence arranges what happens to the body, what happens to the mind, the body and mind, what happens from coming from other living entities, what happens just by nature itself.
Mm-hmm.
like that. So that just comes by providence, by our karma, by the reaction of our activities. So for the devotee, those don't bother them because you see every situation connected to Krishna. Does that make sense? But for the karmi, because every situation is about being happy, then these are three ways you're unhappy. Despite all kinds of tribulations, the living entity, subjected to the necessities of the body, mind and senses, and suffering from various types of disease, is carried away by many plans due to his lust to enjoy the world. So you have all these distractions, necessities of the body, mind, and senses, and then all the disturbances that come that don't allow those to happen. Still, even more than that is the plans to enjoy. Yes. That carries one away, and then one is distracted by that. That's why people, despite all this, they still think life is great.
Yes.
Although transcendental to this material existence, the living entity, out of ignorance, accepts all these material miseries under the pretext of false egoism, I and mine. It's my disease. In this way, he lives for 100 years within this body, 21 to 25. The goal of this elaborate description of material suffering is to create a positive attraction for devotional service. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to verse 25, knowing the basic misery of material existence, one should be induced to get out of the material clutches and return home back to Godhead. Actually, the living entity is not at all happy in this material body. Because of the body, he suffers thirst and hunger and is influenced by the mind, by words, by anger, by the belly, by the genitals, by the rectum, and so on. Manifold miseries encircle the transcendental living entity simply because he desires to satisfy his senses in this material world. If he simply withdraws from activities of sense gratification and applies his senses in the service of the Lord, all the problems of material existence will immediately diminish, right? Because we engage in the senses, and we've tried removing the senses from the sense objects. But neither of them work for the living entity. So it's being said here is remove it from material activities, but engage them in spiritual activities. So the same engagement of the senses, just connected to the Lord. And with the advancement of Krishna consciousness, he will be freed from all tribulation, and after giving up the body, will return home back to Godhead. So all the difficulties that come up as we advance, that will go away.
Yes.
Right? So if there's a problem now, don't worry. Just keep doing practicing Krishna consciousness, the right attitude. They'll go away. Not that the problems will go away. Us seeing them as problems will go away.
Yes.
Right? Because that we can control. The material situation, how it unfolds, that we can't control that.
Yes.
Right? Hiranyakashipu already tried that one. Right? He took all the planets, tied them up, stuck them on the stairs to his Sringasan, and would step on their heads to get up to his seat.
Yes.
Right? So he's already tried that, but still it didn't work.
Yes.
Right? What we can do is change our consciousness, like his son.
Mm-hmm.
Then he's not disturbed by the difficulties he goes through. Right? That's the point.
Yes.
Next verse. The living entity by nature has minute independence to choose his own good or bad fortune. But when he forgets his supreme master, the supreme personality of Godhead, he gives himself up to the modes of material nature. Right, so he has independence. He could choose either. But because of his not giving up his relationship to the Lord, he chooses the modes of nature. So he's made his choice, and then the modes of nature make all the choices after that. Being influenced by the modes of material nature, he identifies himself with the body, and for the interest of the body, becomes attached to various activities. Right? So we're attached to activities that are good for the body, or at least that we perceive good for the body. Sometimes he is under the influence of the mode of ignorance, sometimes the mode of passion, and sometimes the mode of goodness. The living entity thus gets different types of bodies under the modes of material nature. Those who are situated in the mode of goodness act piously according to Vedic injunctions. Thus they are elevated to the higher planetary systems where the demigods live. Those who are influenced by the mode of passion engage in various types of productive activities in the planetary systems where human beings live. Similarly, those influenced by the mode of darkness are subject to various types of misery and live in the animal kingdom. Covered by the mode of ignorance in material nature, the living entity is sometimes a male, sometimes a female, sometimes a eunuch, sometimes a human being, sometimes a demigod, sometimes a bird, an animal, and so on. In this way, he is wandering within the material world. His acceptance of different types of bodies is brought about by his activities under the influence of the modes of nature. 26-29, footnote 40. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verse 29 to Bhagavad Arkamarichi Mala, chapter 8, characteristics of the conditioned soul, Bada Jiva Lakshana, which is within the Sambandha section of the Thakur's book. Right? Because in describing the Jiva, then you have the generic aspects of what is Jiva. Then he describes what is the conditioned Jiva, what is the liberated Jiva. So this then gives the very clear, definition of the conditioned living entity. Right? And so, therefore, he wanders around in the material world, wherever it may be. Mm-hmm. So, some sense. Yeah. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to verse 29, under the influence of Maya, the living entity becomes exactly like a person haunted by a ghost. Right? Because the ghost means the modes of nature. You just do what that does. You don't know why you're doing things. Such a person speaks all kinds of nonsense. When the living entity is covered by the influence of Maya, he becomes a so-called scientist, philosopher, politician, or socialist, and at every moment presents different plans for the benefits of human society. Right, so they're performing the mechanical activities of this, but they're not actually these things. Because a real scientist, a real philosopher, politician, or socialist would be connected with the Lord, with the Supreme. That's it real. Right? These other things are not real. All these plans are ultimately failures because they are illusory. In this way, the living entity forgets his position as an eternal servant of the Lord. So that's he's forgotten that, so whatever position he takes is an illusion. Even though they're using the mechanics properly, because someone will say, no, it's practical, it's working, the mechanics are working. And yes, they are. But the point is, it's an illusion if one doesn't see the connection between those mechanics and Krishna. Right? Your position within those mechanics, the result within those mechanics. Right? If I'm a servant, then I perform the activity, I get the results from Krishna. Then it works. But if I see myself as controller and enjoyer, I use the same activities, the results are mine. Right? So that's illusion. That's Maya. But then if he sees it connected to Krishna, then he can get out. Only when he comes in contact with a bona fide spiritual master can he understand his real constitutional position. Yes. Because by speculation you can't. Yes. It'll always be better or lesser conditional. He then becomes disgusted with material existence. Right? Because it's just not the right thing. Mm-hmm. Right? In the beginning we say, okay, this is not right, but I like it. But after a while it gets, it's not right, I don't like it. So it's not even a matter I have to say it's not right. I just don't like it. So you just engage in Krishna consciousness. At that time, in full Krishna consciousness, he regrets his past experiences in material existence. Right? This regret is very beneficial because it purifies the living entity of material conditional life. This is not regret, and now I can do nothing. Regret that causes you can't do anything means there's an identity there. I identify this way and I feel bad so I can't function. No, I've changed my identity. I regret that I thought otherwise. That will purify. So regret is purifying. Whether it's purifying simply on the difference between impiety and piety on the material platform, or the difference between material life, which is impious, and spiritual life, which is pious. Right? So regret means when we see that I didn't do something that should have been done. Right? And when you get down in the mode of ignorance, we regret not having done something wrong. Right? Then it really gets weird. Right? He then prays to the Lord to engage in his service, and at that time, Krishna grants liberation from the clutches of Maya. Right? So if we want to be freed from Maya, then we have to actually regret being involved in it. But that means because we see it's not useful. Right? We're supposed to be serving Krishna, we've been serving Maya, that's a problem. So when we come to that we actually mean that, then Krishna liberates one from Maya.
Could we say that it's almost more difficult to move out of the mode of goodness because we think we're doing right?
Yeah, you can. You have to be careful. That's why we profess pure goodness. So we're not trying to get devotees to the platform of goodness. It was a popular philosophy, when was that, 90s? Like that. There was somebody who was preaching, just you have to get to the mode of goodness. Only then we can do devotional service. But what was being missed is it's true. But the only way that those in passion and ignorance can get to goodness is through devotional service. But we have to be open to the point of that being situated in goodness is the best position. So that part was correct. But that you're separate going to endeavor for goodness and get there, that was the mistake. Then you can just get stuck there. Well, there's millions of smartas and all kinds of people who follow the Vedic things today. You can go. They're all over. We don't see them because we generally move, you know, in the passionate circles and stuff like that. But you can go to all kinds of places where people just live the traditional lifestyle. And they're still living it. You know, even we come along, then they like what we're doing, but they stay where they are. They don't change because right? They get conditioned by goodness.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Jai Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki Jai Nitai Gaura